Do you want to be transformed? Sure, why not, right? Meaning what? What are the details? Here's a really big question. Do we think that it's possible to be transformed by organized religion, such as Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, or Unitarian Universalism? Yes. Enlightenment. I was and still am fascinated with the concept of what it might feel like to be enlightened. I think that I have felt snippets of it in my life, moments of enlightenment, and then poof, I'm right back into it again. When I was a little girl, before I knew any better or what I was hoping for, I asked the universe to help me become enlightened. I'm not sure why or how I thought, one, the universe was listening to me, and two, how I'd ever be able to realize such a request, but I made the request all the same. In a vision, or most likely it was a dream, it was explained to me by I'm not sure whom that I could attain enlightenment in this life. But first I'd have to learn the lessons that living life on this physical plane had to offer. In short, I'd have to face hardships, difficult experiences in rapid succession, rather than experiencing them over numerous lifetimes. So as a child, I was certain that with some perseverance that I would one day become enlightened. I have faced challenges in my life and loss, but most days I feel blessed to just be able to experience this life. Come what may, enlightenment for me seems to be nowhere in sight. I'm a work in progress, and I'm waiting most days patiently for the proverbial lightning of insight to strike. I'm sure that there is a Jungian archetype for the character that I play in this lifetime. Maybe the sage, the magician, the warrior, the ruler, or maybe even the jester. My guess is that we each move in and out of different roles at various times throughout our lives. I was drawn to Unitarian Universalism because I resonated with the principles, and I wanted to walk with others who were on a similar transformative journey, other like-minded seekers, in the hopes that I would be able to find a truth in a place where questions and questioning were encouraged. Religion to me has always seemed remote, esoteric, a gatekeeper to the truth. Seek the truth and it shall set you free. Those were the words on my Catholic church walls when I grew up. I knew this, but in the Catholic Christian mythology, I was a little stymied. It explained nuances of life, the harshness of humankind, but did not reveal the wisdom. Where was the wisdom? In Christianity, we have Christ, which is not Jesus' last name, I was later to find out. Christ actually translates to the anointed one, a person who was literally anointed with oil. Kings were anointed with oil, which sealed their place in the order of things, but did not necessarily make them messiahs or gods incarnate. I think the title of Christ in the same way, I think of it in the same way that I think of the word enlightenment. They are synonymous to me, Christ and enlightenment. In an article that I read this week about archetypes in religion, written by an Anglican priest in England who is also a psychologist, Christ was described as an archetype. I was intrigued. This is what I read. The Christ is eternal in as much as it is an archetype. But archetypes cannot be fully embodied in one person. Rather, an archetype is expressed in the life of individuals, but the expression will always be mediated by that individual and the shape of their own psyche and human experience. Archetypes might be described as instincts of the soul. Or another way of thinking about it might be our inherent essence. In the same way that a bird knows instinctively how to build a nest, or a baby knows how to suckle, so our essence, our soul, has built-in mechanisms that recognize dimensions of psychic reality or connectedness. These are archetypes. So let us use the hypothesis then of soul instincts. I would suggest that the Christ archetype is the archetype of the perfected human being, a concept that Unitarians know only too well, because we believe that we can strive towards being that good. We believe that humankind is not tainted by original sin. We have the potential to be completely in tune with our higher self, with a capital S, and in tune with that which the church could call or would call God, and Jung and some Eastern religions would call the self, capital S. Buddhists call this way of being enlightenment. This Christ archetype is built into the human psyche and is constantly searching for expression in the world. There are at least three possible routes for this expression. One is hero worship, the idealization and adulation of figures past, present, or legendary, common to all school age children, think about all the comics we read, and rather to many adults as well. The second is the kind of religion that projects the archetype onto someone else or some divinely constituted set of laws, so living it vicariously in a secondhand sort of way, but under the guise of having someone else having divine authority. The third way, which happens to be my favorite, is simply live it. Seems to be the easiest, too. Live it. The philosopher Joseph Campbell, do we all know Joseph Campbell, would encourage us to be mindful of our archetypal self, capital S, and wrote extensively about humankind's proclivity to be the seeker, filled with the desire to quest for truth and meaning. A myth that calls to me about questing is King Arthur and his quest to seek the Holy Grail. How many people just thought of life, Monty Python. I did, sort of, apparently. And I think about the Holy Grail as that cup that held the blood, the essence of Christ. And so King Arthur sought it. There was a hero's journey, and this is what Joseph Campbell talks a lot about. It's played out in parts. Heroes are introduced in the ordinary world, where they receive the call to adventure. They are reluctant at first, and they might even refuse the call, but are encouraged by a mentor, like Merlin, for example, literal or metaphorical, to cross the first threshold and enter the special world, where they encounter tests, allies, and enemies. They approach the inmost cave, crossing a second threshold where they endure an ordeal of sorts. They take possession of their reward if they're lucky and worthy, and they are pursued on the road back to the ordinary world. They cross the third threshold and experience a resurrection and are transformed by the experience. The hero then returns with the elixir, a boon or treasure that may benefit the ordinary world. Does any of this experience sound familiar? Have any of you been on such a journey? Are you on such a journey now? Personally, I feel like I've been on one journey after another in my life, gleaning lessons, elixirs, the entire time. Many of these insights I have brought back. I've shared some of the stories and insights with you. Some of my experiences have been so esoteric that they are difficult to even explain. And I'm still working on unpacking their meaning. One experience that I have shared with you, excuse me, was being in a literal cave in southern England, where I risked my life, faced my fear, realized what fear really is, a construct of the mind that can and does hold us back from going deeper into an understanding of self. Facing into fear by finding our courage leads us to transformation. This was not something that I had planned on my vacation to experience. I fell into it. And yet it was very much the experience of a hero's journey to me. Throughout history and in mythology, there have been many of these stories told. Heroes like Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, had a similar journey as a young adult. His childhood was idyllic and very protected, thus he chose to seek by leaving home. He sought enlightenment in any way that he could find, and yet it was elusive to him. He wanted to understand the need for and meaning of suffering. A Zen master taught that we could easily describe the story of the Buddha going forth from his home as an archetypal experience, where the story of the Buddha was not only ascribed to him, but to previous Buddhas. It seems that everybody who seeks enlightenment must go through this transformative experience when he or she embarks on a spiritual life. The story of the Buddha leaving his family, leaving the protection of a home, and going to the world seems to me to be an experience that we all at some time take in one way or another in finding ourselves. Carl Jung, when visiting the place where the Buddha gave his first speech, agreed completely. Jung said, "I grasp the life of the Buddha as the reality of self. Buddha became, as it were, the image of the development of the self. The Buddha isn't a god or a prophet, someone who was able to commune with God, but just a guy, not that different than the rest of us. And thus his story makes him more accessible than perhaps the idealized and largely manufactured stories of Jesus or Muhammad. We can then view the Buddha's life not as an abstract, removed story of someone who lived 2,500 years ago, but as one that reveals the nature of the universal in us all. This becomes a way of understanding our own experience in a larger and more profound context, one that connects the Buddha's journey with our own. We have undertaken to follow the same path, motivated by the same questions. What is the true nature of our lives? What is the root cause of our suffering, our fear and suffering catalysts for transformation? If we are willing to dig deeper in religious mythology, I believe that we can find these types of transformational stories everywhere. In Buddhist, Taoist, Islamic, Hindu, Christian, Celtic, nature, and Native American stories. The Buddha, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad all found deeper meaning in the motif of the cave and the desert. I was surprised in seminary when my New Testament professor, a devout Baptist, shared that all of these quests for meanings, their mythology and stories, are interconnected. I was like, whoa. I didn't expect it. He explained that Christianity is an echo of Buddhism, which is an echo of Hinduism. I would take that even further, encourage us to see how creation myths from all over the world have common threads. Spring is a very important time of year as we move into a time of significant transformation. You know, we've got this wonderful snow, but soon we'll have grass and buds, hopefully, and flowers and birds. The pagans have rebirth with May Day. The Jewish religion, also known as Beltane, the Jewish religion holds the stories of Exodus, plagues, and Passover. The Christian religion holds Palm Sunday and the resurrection, the rebirth, at Easter. See the similarities? They exist everywhere. In keeping with the theme of transformation through resurrection, I uncovered a BBC 4 documentary that explained that Jesus spent his lost years between the ages of 13 and 29 as a Buddhist monk in India. His name was Isa. The title of the documentary is Did Jesus Die on the Cross? And takes the viewer on an interesting quest for possible clues to an alternative ending to the Jesus myth. The description to the film explains this, that in 1887, a Russian doctor named Nicholas Natovich went to India, Tibet, and Afghanistan in order to write The Unknown Life of Christ. Natovich soon found himself recovering from a broken leg at a Buddhist monastery of Hemis, atop India in the city of Leh. Two large yellow volumes were presented to him, The Life of Saint Isa. He read that Isa, Jesus, was born in the first century in Israel, and that Vedic scholars tutored him from the age of 13 to age of 29. It was explained that when a great Buddhist or holy man perishes, and we know this to be fact, wise men scrutinize the stars and natural omens to guide them to an infant who is their reincarnation. The child is eventually taken to be educated in the Buddhist faith, which is quite similar to the traditional stories of the three wise men. As per a senior lama, Jesus is said to have visited the East and Kashmir to study Buddhism. He was inspired by the laws and wisdom of Buddha. Russian philosopher and scientist Nicholas Roerich adds that Jesus passed his time in several ancient cities of India. Everyone loved him because Isa dwelt in peace. The documentary also explained that Isa was persecuted but did not die from crucifixion. Instead, he left and traveled back to India and Afghanistan, living with many different communities, learning from and teaching Buddhism along the way. Isa lived in the Kashmir Valley and died at the age of 80. His body is said to be enshrined in Rozabal in Sringar in Kashmir. The authorities in this documentary, and there were many scholars, cited that they believed that the Gospel of Thomas alludes to the fact that Jesus did survive crucifixion. Dr. Elaine Pagels, a historian, professor at Princeton, and author of The Agnostic and Beyond Beliefs, The Secret Gospel of Thomas, is one of those authorities. I met Dr. Pagels in 2005 when she was the Ware Lecturer at the UUA General Assembly. I was her escort for the time that she was with us at GA, and she was kind enough to let me pick her brain. I was still a student then, so I had a lot of questions. She did not confirm nor deny that Jesus was in fact Isa. She did explain that Jesus could have physically survived the crucifixion. Usually it took days for one to die from torture such as this, and Jesus was said to have been taken down from the cross in a short period of 6 hours. Dr. Pagels also explained that Christianity as a religion needed Christ to die on the cross and rise again from the tomb on Easter morning to validate the Nicene Creed, the creed that is shared every Sunday in every Christian church around the world, a creed that contains what I believe are the milestones of the mythology of a hero's journey. Listen, he was born, he lived a human life, he went on a pilgrimage, he was persecuted, suffered, died, buried, he rose again, he will return. See it? The battle rages on. And personally, I think it's a waste of time discussing and arguing about the life of the historic Jesus, a battle about history that is fairly impossible to prove. I'm not sure that it really matters if there was a historical Jesus who lived and died on the cross, unless, of course, you're a devout Christian. The key for us today is not to enter into the debate about Jesus' life and death, but instead to understand the underpinnings of the mythology that tells of his transformative journey in human form. I was personally intrigued by the connection of Jesus to Buddhism in the documentary, which affirmed my gospel professor's assertions about echoing beliefs between religions. But I also know that proof is unlikely to ever be uncovered, unless more scrolls are unearthed in the caves of Qumran. Interestingly enough, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, also came to his insights about Islam in a cave. Another interesting fact is that in Islam, the name for Jesus is, wait for it, any guesses? Isa. The intersection of the world's religions stymie me, and our shared mythology and beliefs are absolutely fascinating. Just look beyond the struggle for historic proof. This morning, as we wonder about transformation, as we wonder about making ends meet in our canvas pledge, in this life, fear and suffering, as we wonder about our mythology and why there is so much to find within the darkness of caves, I feel compelled to ask one question. Are we there yet? I've been striving my whole life with a few respites here and there towards enlightenment. I look at the state of the world and I'm flummoxed. Is it just me? We seem to be sliding backwards as a species, slogged in a quagmire of need and greed. Have we not learned anything from our mythology? We are clearly on a journey. We are facing challenges and enemies. We are being tested to our limits. And ultimately, hopefully, we will be transformed by this experience. I look around this world and I see suffering and struggle everywhere. I can see that there are moments of enlightenment, though, within the struggle. Moments of euphoria, moments of hopefulness, which help us just enough to revitalize and to carry on. I do not know about you, but I feel like we're standing at the crossroads in history. And I am with the Anglican priest from Southern England, who I quoted earlier. The third way to understand enlightenment, Buddha, and Christ consciousness is to simply live it. To be the hero, to be the Christ, to live the incarnation rather than believe in it. Of course, the latter way is far more risky, and most of us settle for hero worship or religion. For in doing so, it acknowledges that the archetype is there, but avoids the inevitable dangers that accompany the hero's journey. Live it. My friends, we can no longer avoid living into this life fully. So here I am, once again, daring us to live into this life. Do the work. Face our fears. Get hurt. Have our heart broken over and over and over again, and suffer with the best of them as we hold out our arms in faith that the promise of enlightenment is just around the corner. That is when, maybe just maybe, we will be able to look back and realize just how transformed we have become on this hero's journey. I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection and prayer. Who has experienced a journey? Chad. David, E. Marie, Sheila, right? We have all had them. Is anybody willing to talk about a lesson they learned along the way? 2 seconds, 2 sentences. I know I'm asking a lot to share your wisdom. Chad.
So on the journey, I've gotten it wrong. I will continue to get it wrong. But in the awareness of getting it wrong, it opens up the possibility that I will get it more right than wrong, and I can create more positive in the world than negative that I create. And it just allowing myself that failure, it gives me hope, and it gives an opportunity to create something that's better than what was here when I got here.
Thank you for sharing that. I think about those young kids down in Florida, you know, who faced a huge tragedy, and how they're trying to transform themselves and their world by standing up. March 24th, next Saturday, there'll be a march in Boston and Washington, around the country, in support of those kids and gun control. But that's transformation right there. That's a hero's journey right there. Am I right? Right? Anybody else have something that really sits with them about a lesson that they learned along the way? Sheila, Pamela?
I just want to quote Grandma Moses. Life's what you make of it, always has been, always will be.
Ain't that the truth?
It can be exciting. And even though there's some sort of quivering fear, it can also be a challenge, and you can really feel good about it.
Thank you. Anybody else? How many people feel like they're on a journey right now? Right? Ain't that the truth? David, did you want to say something? Were you raising your hand to say something?
I guess for me, one of the big things recently was to realize we live in a world of opposites. And in my earlier idealism, I thought some of those opposites could be eliminated in order to make the world better. And of late, I've realized you can't do that, because without opposites, you don't have balance. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need most.
Balance. Mark.
I think one of the lessons I have to keep learning over and over and over again as a strong introvert is to not be afraid to reach out for help along the journey.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Aileen.
Happiness is a choice. You can have all the things in the world and choose to be miserable. You can think about all the horrible things that have happened, all the mistakes that you have made, all the tragedies you may have participated in or observed, and be miserable. Or you can be the poorest person in the world and choose to see joy and choose to see happiness and spread that to everyone and be happy every single day.
Thank you. Oh, Paul. Jenny, I'm giving you your workout today. She's jogging.
This is not about a prolonged journey, but an invitation that we get at the gym very frequently, which is to go beyond your comfort zone, which would be the invitation to begin the journey. And if you stay within your comfort zone, you don't go anywhere.
That's Thank you.
When you go beyond that, that's when you grow.
Thank you. So these kinds of lessons are everywhere. They're in the news. They're in our friends. They're in the people we don't know yet. So it's incredible to just take the time to, a moment even, just the moment, to connect with someone and tell them about something that you've learned or something that has touched you, or ask them about their own lives. I know that we don't do that much in everyday life, but maybe we should. Thank you for participating. And for this we pray. May it be so. Amen.